Hello, listeners. It's your host, Aisha. So you're about to hear all about Art Song from my guest, Mark Abel, which, by the way, we're entering the land of hardcore classical knowledge. So just prepare yourselves. I was a little intimidated at first because this is moving into an echelon of music writing that I just kind of couldn't wrap my head around. But that's what this show is here for. Mark Abel explains it so well that by the end of our discussion, I feel like I actually kind of got this. And I hope that you do too. Also, I just wanted to remind you to subscribe to, rate us, and review us on iTunes, which, by the way, you guys have been doing, and we have been moving up in the iTunes charts, but we want to dominate the podcast charts, so keep up the good work. Anyway, I shall shut up so that you can enjoy the episode. Yep, that's it. My name is Daisha Clay. I'm the audio librarian here at Classical 91.7. While I'm a real librarian, I have a deep, dark
secret.
I know very little about classical music. I grew up listening to rock, and I know something about jazz. But when it comes to classical, but I really want to learn. So, every week on this show, a classical music expert will give me a piece of classical music they think I should know, and then we'll discuss it. Come learn with me in the classical classroom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I'm Daisha Clay, and here with me today is composer Mark Abel. Mark is, as I said, a composer. Once upon a time, he was a journalist, and his work as a composer reflects that in its use of contemporary topics. Back in the late 70s and early 80s, he was a rock bassist and played with people like Tom Verlaine, collaborated with bands like Television. He knew Dee Dee and Joey Ramone, but his classical music interests eventually brought him back to the music, and ultimately to Classical Classroom here today. Mark Abel, welcome to the Classical Classroom.
Thank you. Great to be here. I'm at the studios of KCBX Public Radio in San Luis Obispo.
Okay, I was going to ask. I wasn't actually sure where you were today.
Sunny San Luis Obispo, California.
Nice. Yeah. Well, so what are you going to be teaching me about today?
Well, I thought that I would try to learn you on Art Song, which is a very unique kind of slice of the classical world, and one that is kind of a lot more influential in the interior of that world than people might expect on the outside.
Yeah, what does that mean? What is art song? I've heard this term thrown around.
An art song would usually be defined as a poem set to music, usually performed by a trained singer and piano accompaniment. The German word for art song is Lied in the singular and Lieder in plural.
Oh, yeah, okay.
In France, the term is Mélodie, and in Italy, Romanza.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But the character of art song is it strives to be the perfect combination of music and literature based on four elements, the poet, the composer of the music, the singer, and the accompanist. Huh. They all have their own thing to do. And the composer, in writing a song, uses the full resources of the art form to embellish the poet's text, and sometimes his music will lead him to bring up potential interpretations of the text that were not explicit in the poet's words.
So, I'm assuming, since this involves poetry, that it always has a vocal component.
Yes, correct. There's no such thing as an art song without vocal. Yeah.
I see. And where does this kind of music come from? Like, can we trace it back to a particular place in classical music's history?
The, you know, kind of origins of art song would go back many centuries, and they're vague in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But the idiom as we know it today basically stems from pioneering work starting in the early 19th century, mostly with Franz Schubert.
Ah, okay.
He and the other leading romantic song composers who followed him learned to exploit the device of varying what's called a strophic melody.
Hmm.
And a strophic melody is one where each stanza of the poem is set to the same music. This is, of course, what goes on in pop music. It still dominates, just verse chorus, the very familiar structure that you hear in pop music. But the Romantics wanted to get away from this strict way of doing things, and they were looking to widen the expressive horizon. So they began modifying the voice and accompaniment details to more closely follow what was going on in the text, rather than have it be in a straitjacket of having to have these musical sections that kept repeating every, X number of seconds. So as this music developed in the 19th century, it eventually evolved into through-composed songs. Mm-hmm. And that's a term, through-composed, where which means that the music is so closely wedded to the text that little or no repetition in the music occurs.
Huh. And
new motifs or musical ideas are constantly being introduced to more exactly express what the text is saying.
Oh, interesting. So it kind of is very different from that idea that you were talking about with pop music, where, you've got your verse, you've got your chorus, and you keep coming back to the chorus over and over.
Through composed art songs are trying to break away and break through to, kind of the mental structure of the piece and letting the music go where they think it ought to go.
I see.
And in the 20th century, this expanded even more, especially in the role of the singer being able to have a bigger range of expression and technique and maybe not sing in such a formal manner.
Mm-hmm.
And the role of the pianist or the accompanying instrument also expanded so that it's playing a bigger role in pushing the music forward.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it even states its own independent ideas, mm-hmm. which leave the singer to be holding on to the words, but sometimes the music may be going in a slightly different direction as what is suggested. So it's interesting.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we should hear some art song now that we have like a nice definition in place.
Yeah.
Who should we? Well, first, I meant to ask you, who are sort of the major composers of this kind of music? You mentioned Schubert.
Schubert was kind of the pioneer, followed by Robert Schumann. Brahms wrote an awful lot of songs. Mussorgsky, Tchaikovsky, Richard Strauss, Mahler, Charles Ives, Copland, Debussy, Ravel, Fauré, Shostakovich, and that's just naming a few.
Yeah.
Probably the two most important and revered song composers, or close to it, are a pair of guys who are remembered for nothing but their song output, and that's the French composer Henri Duparc, who lived from 1848 to 1933, and the Austrian Hugo Wolf, who lived from 1860 to 1903.
Okay.
Yeah, and Duparc is somebody who's meant a lot to me. He was one of the first song composers I discovered.
Now, is Duparc a contemporary guy? Is he when did he write music?
He wrote almost all his music in the mid to late 19th century. And his story is kind of a tragic and very interesting one. He was really on his way to become a prominent composer. And in his mid-30s, he was kind of overtaken by what either was kind of a emotional or psychological disease that never was diagnosed properly. And he stopped writing at age 35.
Oh, man.
And he lived for another 48 years after that. But he never wrote any more songs after age 35.
Wow.
So he's known for 13 or 14 songs that are, some of the best art song you can incorporate. But he could have done much more, obviously, if he hadn't been struck down by this malady.
That sounds, that reminds me of Arthur Rimbaud, the French poet.
Yes.
Yeah, he wrote like just these incredible, intense poems when he was very, very young, and then sort of got into doing business, and sort of he just divorced himself from poetry altogether, and then died tragically young. But he had
this one period of
intense creativity that left behind this amazing record
of
work. Yeah. So, let's hear some of Duparc.
Okay. Well, this song is the last song that Duparc wrote before he stopped writing. The title of it is La Vie Antérieure, which is usually translated as The Formal Life. Mm. And it's a setting of a poem of Baudelaire's from his famous Flowers of Evil collection. It's a really good example of through, what I called through composition earlier. It starts with a hypnotically beautiful piano motif for the first minute or so. And then it goes off in other directions based on the musings of somebody who is talking about a past existence where they lived in, you know, exotic climes. And then kind of the plug gets pulled at the end and the person is overtaken by depression and the piece really goes in another direction altogether. And the whole last minute of the song is just the piano playing by itself. Mm.
Hmm. So So that's, I get it now. It's really interesting. So the through music means it's almost as if the vocalist is sort of telling you a story.
Yes, for
sure. And so is the piano.
Yeah, I mean they're trying to hook you into a kind of a linear journey.
Yeah, okay.
That doesn't involve repeating sequences. Yeah,
I see. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's it's strange how that messes with your mind.
Yeah, it can mess with your mind, but I mean that's the way poems are. You know,
a
modern poem is taking you somewhere, and so this is kind of the musical response to it, I would say.
Well, okay. Now, this brings us to your work, which, by the way, congrats on your nice write-up in Gramophone that I just read.
Oh, thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Before we get into your art song, I'd like to hear a little bit about your musical journey, because I know that you sort of started in classical, moved to rock, and then kind of wound up back at classical. So, so tell us how that journey went.
Well, the early involvement with classical was, due entirely to my dad, I would say, who was a big fan, particularly of 19th century classical. I loved it, and I was quite immersed in it until I was maybe 11 or 12. Mm-hmm. And at that point, we'd been living overseas, and we came back to the States, and I started hearing other stuff, the sort of cheesy pop music of the time. We're talking the early 60s now. Mm-hmm. And wasn't too interested in that, but I was interested in jazz. I was interested in the folk music movement of the early 60s. Mm-hmm. And then finally, when rock really burst onto the scene with the Beatles initially, I was a little resistant of it at first, but my resistance crumbled after the group The Byrds appeared.
Oh, yeah.
This wonderful Los Angeles group, which basically invented the folk rock idiom. And since I liked folk music and I liked the power of the electric instruments, they were really the group that drew me into wanting to be part of that world. And I was just fortunate enough to be living right at, in my opinion, at the apex of that kind of music. So I got to see all the really great rock groups of the 60s and jazz people like John Coltrane and Thelonious Monk and Cecil Taylor. And it just was a great time to be young and alive and in love with music.
Yeah.
If it had happened 10 years after that, it would have been a slightly different result, because I think that certainly the peak of modern jazz for me was in the 60s and just kind of barely into the early 70s. But that's taste.
But you carried on with the rock music. You got involved with it yourself, and you actually were playing with people like the sort of proto-punk band. Well, at least I know you were playing with Tom Verlaine from Television. You knew some Ramones, which I mean,
I knew some
wow.
Ramones. I didn't really come of age to become a performing musician until the 70s. So, yes, I had a bunch of bands of my own in New York during the 1970s, most of which didn't get terribly far. But I knew a lot of the people on the scene. I knew Verlaine and Television. I produced the first album by a fairly well-known group called The Feelies.
Yeah.
And a number of other groups in the new wave thing that started in the mid and late 70s. So, yes, it was very interesting. But just for clarity's sake, I would have to say that punk rock and new wave rock was not, what I loved. I just happened to know people on the scene, and I had a little bit more experience than some of them, so I was able to work for them as a sound engineer and producer and stuff like that.
But eventually, you kind of came to a point where you found that sort of music, that kind of limiting, which
correct.
I thought that was really interesting, reading about your musical history, because now rock music is now producing some very complex and emotionally rich sounds. Like when I think about bands like Radiohead and Sigur Rós and things like that, that are just, beautiful and layered. And but you left the genre kind of and moved into classical, at least from what I read.
Yeah, I felt that the genre as it existed by the late 70s was not, that nothing new was being said in it.
I see. Okay.
Some people wouldn't agree with that, but that was what my opinion was. So yeah. I sort of stopped listening to rock, even though I was still playing it. And I think 1978 and 79 were the key years where, as a listener, which has always kind of guided my aesthetic, at least as much as playing or writing, classical was much, it was much deeper to me, and it was hitting on all kinds of musical issues that rock doesn't really address. You know, rock does not let you get terribly progressive. It doesn't like long songs. So I was able to reawaken the interest that I had when I was a kid, but had to make up for about 15 years of not listening to it. I had to go back and discover a whole lot of composers who I had never had time for when I was very young.
And so the music brought you back, and you are now composing art song.
Art song and an opera. That's, I think that I'm into vocal music probably because, in a way, of my long experience of pop music. I did learn to how to write for voice.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about it, like, it sounds like your experience with classical music and then with rock music kind of melded to make this art song, because it kind of brings those elements of story and music. Mm-hmm. Together, that pop music often has, and
yes,
the classical music together. I'm also interested in to have read that you were a reporter, and the topics that you address in your work have a lot to do with contemporary, you know, sort of things that we're seeing in the news.
Well, thanks for noticing that. Yes, I went off and did journalism for a living for a long time, mostly at the San Francisco Chronicle, and I was the chief foreign editor there for some years. So most of my time was spent specializing in foreign news. But I've also, you know, been a student of American society for a long time now.
Right.
And there's plenty of stuff to write about, especially right now.
No shortage. Well. Now that we have established all of this about you, I think we should hear some of your work. What should we hear first?
Well, I would like to play you a song called Los Angeles, which is one of the songs in a song cycle called The Palm Trees Are Restless, which is on my most recent album for the Delos label.
Uh-huh.
And the soprano is Gila Plitman, who's quite a well-known soprano. The pianist is Tali Tadmore. And this is a setting of a poem by a contemporary L.A. poet named Kate Gale, mm-hmm. who writes very powerful and edgy stuff. And I strongly identify with what she did. And this piece is kind of it's fairly lengthy, but it's amusing on living in Los Angeles, a really vast place that can be very overwhelming in a lot of ways, and especially to a person who needs a kind of a private space. And by the end of the song, as the poem goes, this person has kind of suffered a kind of dematerialization. She's kind of been beaten down by all the weird stuff that goes on. And I think that the poem and the music for it fit together really nicely.
All right.
Shape or color, money gives a body form. Like a straight jacket holding you against wind. Past events, you are shadow against dusk.
I'm noticing from listening to Art Song that it's hard to hang on to a bit. Like, you have to really sort of pay attention because you don't have that hook.
Yes, I think that you're onto something very significant about it. And this is, you know, what you're saying can be translated into a lot of different levels of interest in classical music right now. I don't know what the future of this music is if people can't find the time to sit down and listen to it, because it's not meant to be background music. It's meant to be listened to. Well, as you know, of course. Yeah. No, it's challenging in its own way.
Yeah. I think challenging, that's a good word. And I mean, a lot of contemporary classical music that I've heard is very challenging, but it's sort of like, as most challenging things are, very rewarding if you sort of take the time, as you're saying, to listen to it, to really pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, so, what should we hear next? What else do you have?
The last song, Los Angeles, was an example of me setting somebody else's poetry to music. I also write my own texts. I wouldn't call myself a poet per se, but because I've done a lot of songwriting, I'm a pretty good lyricist. And in the last 6 or 7 years, I've tried to write quite a few texts that can be set to music. So we have here excerpts from... the first one is a piece called Premonition, which is part of a song cycle called The Dark-Eyed Chameleon. This is a piece for, again, for soprano and piano. Jamie Chamberlain is the singer, and Vicky Kirsch is the pianist. And this is part of this cycle is a kind of a personal tragedy that I wrote about, and it was a very cathartic exercise for me to write it. And I was very happy that most of the people who reviewed this record weren't bothered by this, the way that I had kind of gone off the usual track of just setting somebody else's poetry. I think they got the emotion that was behind it. So the second half of Premonition is at a point where the narrator has realized that something is not quite right with the person that they're involved with, and it goes from there. It's kind of the first serious realization that things are off track.
Okay. I like that dissonant piano. On a dead planet without a name, orbiting a dead That's a very different example. The lyrics remind me a little bit of David Bowie. A little bit with the space theme. You know, the metaphors that are... Yeah. So, well, set up one more piece for us before we wrap up.
Okay. This is a piece from the same album, which is entitled Terrain of the Heart. And the name of the song is La Sonnambula, which means the sleepwalker in Italian. And this song is about someone who's recovering from a kind of long crisis of confidence of the spirit, and for the first time she's starting to believe that she can love somebody and that there might be a happy ending for her. So the point in which we're going to go in is where she's just kind of getting used to the idea that she's emerged from a dark period and going forward.
Okay.
the trees of a forest arch and bend, but do not break. I can believe for the first time there is grace and peace.
That's really lovely. I like...
Thank you.
I like the piano, the sort of hopeful sound in the piano, too, in addition to what she's saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of minor at the end to remind you of what she's... The darkness that she's come out of.
Yeah. That she's just sort of still emerging from.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah.
It's great.
Glad you like it.
Wow, Mark. That was awesome.
Thanks, Stacia.
Well, I know I feel like I say this a lot on this show. This is the first time I've ever actually heard of this kind of music. I'd heard mm-hmm. that term art song before, but I assumed it was just sort of like a general term, art mm-hmm. song. But no, it's a whole thing.
It's a whole genre of its own, and it's not terribly popular in the United States for reasons uh-huh. I've never understood. I think it's too concentrated, too naked, maybe.
Yeah.
But all those famous composers whose names I rattled off, they believed that it was something significant.
They so liked it.
There must be something to it, right?
They thought it was worthwhile. Yeah. Well, this has been great, Mark. Thank you so much for being on the Classical
You're
Classroom.
You're welcome. Thank you, Dacia, so much.
All right, everybody. That does it for this episode of Classical Classroom. For more Classroom, go to houstonpublicmedia.org/classroom. There you will find an array of social media, something to suit every digital palette. You can also email me at dclay@houstonpublicmedia.org. Subscribe to us on iTunes, rate and review us, because seriously, what else are you doing right now? Thanks today to audio producer Todd Hill Holslander for twiddling knobs. Thanks to editor Mark DiClaudio for his piercing punk rock eyes. Thanks very much to engineer Hank Hadley over at KCBX in St. Louis Obispo. Thanks to Mark the Abiter Abel for being here today. Thanks to me for saying words. Most of all, thanks to you for listening. We'll catch you next time.